Hey, you found Van Skyvertown. This is the Van Skyvertown podcast. We're the People's Temple Podcast Project. Welcome to us. More talk, less rock. Let's introduce our friends and fellow shut-ins. We got our rock and roll star, Michael. How you doing today?
Oh, my. It's a beautiful day inside of my apartment. It's a bit cold outside, but I've defeated that by becoming a shut-in.
You're probably the least shut-in of all of us, Michael. I like to think that.
I think that, too.
Oakley, what are you doing? What's going on, man?
I'm great. It's probably a little bit colder, maybe, than Michael, but we'll see. I just swung in the door myself, so I'm not quite shut in. But
beautiful. Nering, what's going on today, man? We had trouble getting you on the phone. You okay? Is everything all right?
I think he couldn't find the phone. That's what's happening right now.
He's doing okay. I kind of blame one of you. Exactly. No, I blame one of you because I suspect that one of you secretly works for Tucker Carlson. And I'm going to get to the bottom of it before tonight's podcast is over.
I'm looking forward to that.
CHV, how are you tonight, my friend?
I'm a little pissed off that I wasn't in Russia today because it looked awful.
I've got my eye on CHV.
But, I'm still alive, you know, blessedly free of asteroid debris in the head. So I'm doing okay. How you doing?
I'm doing good. You know, they're saying the people in Russia believe that was a UFO for a little while.
Might have been. I mean, if you're looking at the footage, I mean, it was pretty freaking awesome. I mean,
was it just the Aerosmith soundtrack?
Yeah, I think so. Looked pretty much like every meteor dropping to Earth in every movie you've ever seen, but it was real.
I think we have one headed for us too. Is that correct?
It passed around 2:30 today.
It
didn't hit anywhere, but Cuba says it hit there, but no one else has seen it. Or
no, they're lying.
Yeah, they
they just want in on the fun,
right?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be a great way to take Castro out at last?
That would be awesome, but he wouldn't be deserved. I'd rather have it happen to me because it would be so great.
Korea. Yeah, you know what? I always say this. It's like people are like, how do you want to die? And then some people are like, I want to die at age 90, warm in my bed, surrounded by family. And I'm just like, fuck that. I want to die in the most awesome way possible. I want to die like, I want to be in a helicopter and I want it to be heading towards the ocean and then it crashed right into a giant great white shark's mouth. And then, boom, like shark meat and Ethan meat and just helicopter blades everywhere. Yeah. That's how I want to die. And my son would be proud because they'd be like, oh, your dad died? How'd that happen? And then you'd get to tell him.
Yeah.
And you couldn't help but just be like, yeah, when you heard that.
Yeah, I definitely want to die in an awesome way that everyone would want to talk about for a long time. A friend of mine used to say that he wants to die while riding a pedal bike and get hit by a plane that fell out of the sky.
CHV, what about you? How do you want to die?
I think I want to fall into a thresher.
Ooh.
Like a good John Deere thresher that's just gotten off the field for the day, and I'm just like not, you know, I'm just looking in the completely the wrong direction and I just get mowed over.
That'd be good. You could end up in British frozen lasagna too.
Maybe. and the best of all, my body parts will be recyclable.
Yeah, they're saying that now. Like the horse meat thing that we've been we discussed on the first Van Skyvertown podcast. I've never been more wrong in my life. Apparently, it's everywhere. Everybody is using horse meat, and we're all eating horses. And in particular, yeah, there's one brand of British frozen food that uses horse meat exclusively instead of beef.
And they claim it's beef?
Well, I one would assume. I mean, I wonder if anybody ever asked them, you know, is this gorilla meat? You know, you wouldn't think to ask.
Right.
You just assume you're eating something that is normal, but why should you assume anything anymore? That's what I'm saying.
Fortunately, there are a lot of rules that allow people to claim 100% beef when actually like 10% of it is rat meat or something.
Well, listen, CHV, if we're going to eat human meat, I'd want it to be yours.
Well, I appreciate that.
Does that sound gay?
I'll second that.
What's going on today, anyway?
Human meat whatsoever except Alzheimer's.
But I'm staying away from Pear, though, not him.
Oh, Randy Perret. How do you say his name anyway?
Perret. I don't know. No idea, but I assume it's pronounced with some sort of European twist.
I called him gay Perret for a little while.
Till he called Facebook and complained, right?
He is my least favorite person on Facebook ever.
He's done a good job of hiding it.
He's such your least favorite person that he's always called out as the exception when you tell everyone you love them.
Anything that's good, any well wishes that I have for humanity, he is like accepted from.
Yeah, there's always the asterisk with his name.
And I don't think I ever did that to Wim or any of the other guys that got under my... Maybe I did. I probably excluded Wim from love, too, every now and then. But I think he deserved it.
I think you
Wim deserved it.
Yeah, I think you dumped him off the page, but I don't know if you actually called him out. At least I didn't see you call him out as the exception at all. Although his little winky smiley after every single thing he said made me want to...
Emoticons.
Yeah. Hey, guys, you might be interested to know that, speaking of horse meat, Ron Jeremy is still recovering from a heart aneurysm in L.A. that he suffered 3 weeks ago. And at some time, allegedly, he was in critical condition and near death, but he's made a recovery, and there's no indication yet of when he's going to be out of the hospital. But, Naring, just to let you know, buddy, the golden age of porn is still alive.
Oh, thank God.
Oh, nice.
You know, I have to say, at one point, I think, as a very conservative young man, I would have thought Ron Jeremy was a waste of human tissue. But looking back on it, I have to say, as I get older, I have to admire a guy like Ron Jeremy, because he devoted his entire life having sex with as many women as possible. And was he cheating on anyone? Was he married? Was he a bad guy? I think everybody knows who he is. This is just, it's like Hugh Hefner. He devoted his life to sex.
I think he's had girlfriends here.
I'm envious.
I don't think he's ever been married.
Yeah.
Well, and he was on The Surreal Life a couple years back. He's a very grounded fella.
Yeah.
Seems like nice.
Everyone on The Surreal Life was always these freak shows waiting to explode. And on the season that Ron Jeremy was on, he was the calming influence, the hedgehog that brought everyone back down to earth.
Well, I've got to believe he's a great businessman too, because outside of porn, he's actually been in literally hundreds of non-porn movies. They might be B movies, but he's been in a lot.
Well, a lot of that's just the fans of his work. I actually met him a few years back, and he seemed really nice, but it's odd. You still get judgmental. You're still like kind of, I'm germophobic. I'm not really bad or anything like that, but there's just something about Ron Jeremy. You're like, I don't want to shake this guy's hand. No.
Right.
You know, like, you've seen too much. You know too much. I don't know.
You want to put on gloves first.
Yeah.
But if you could start over again. I mean, would you maybe trade lives with Ron Jeremy? It's interesting. It's like, if you get one life, okay, and I mean, basically, all male lives are spent in the pursuit of sex.
Right.
I mean, that's the ultimate motivation of everything that we do.
Yeah.
And this guy sort of skipped over the honest route. Well, I mean, the less honest route, actually, the more dishonest route, which is to get a job and to make yourself presentable for the ladies. This guy just went right for it. He took the shortcut.
When he was in college, he actually has a degree in special education, and for a while he was a teacher. And then, from what I understand, the way he got into the porn business is Playgirl or some sort of magazine had a contest where you send in your photo, and if you get picked, you get $100, and he got picked. So then, like, a producer called him and says, you want to make these movies, and then one thing led to another.
Wow.
Huh.
I think the social stigma is the big issue, though. Like, nobody would want their family name really attached to that. But if you removed all that, all those layers, peeled those layers of the onion off, every guy probably would, live that life.
Here's something I'll throw out there. Now, we've all had high school or college jobs where you get a job in the store that sells the thing you like. Like, if you like records, you get a job in a record store. If you like movies, you get a job in a movie theater. And after you know, 3 or 4 months of doing it, man, you don't want to hear another record. You don't want to see a movie. You get sick of popcorn if you're working behind the snack bar.
And where the hell are you going with this narrative?
I wonder if you could have too much sex. If you're Ron Jeremy and having no. sex with your job, all right. can you get burnt on sex?
I think it's possible to get burned on sex for short periods of time. I think you know, it's called a refractory period, and I think after that you're ready to go again.
Then you're just constantly trying to take different avenues with it. Like, maybe that's where we get stories about people like Mick Jagger and David Bowie supposedly, you know, having sex together. If it did happen, maybe it's because they got so burned out and having women every night for years that they just wanted something different.
Right.
Yeah, but Ron Jeremy, I mean, you know, he's done his glory day pictures with like Christy Canyon and Ginger Lynn and stuff like that. But he's also done these really bizarre flicks where he's like nailing grannies and chicks are like 350 pounds and stuff like that. And you're wondering, like, he's obviously doesn't have to do that because he needs a dollar, because, you know, he's got a reputation for basically banking every cent he's ever made. So he's like one of those guys who stuffs all his money in his mattress just in case there's going to be a huge catastrophe in the future. So he's got a lot of cash, but he just doesn't spend it.
He likes all kinds of women.
Maybe that's part of his thing. He wants to be different. He doesn't want to just be the guy who's in the same old porn every time. He wants to stick out in some way, so to speak.
Yes.
I don't think I'd want to be in porn. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, but I mean, just... I guess that's the price that he pays. But boy, I mean, just being able to, you know, be with all kinds of women for the majority of your life, because I mean, I'm sure that his life hasn't changed that much since he first began. It just seems like a life well lived in many ways.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, I've heard porn stars describe their work in a way that makes it seem not as enjoyable as you'd think. It's not like having your girlfriend or wife with you at home and having sex. It's like they're going in and doing a job and there are 40 or 50 people standing around them the whole time, you know, pointing lights at them and yelling at them, telling them what to do. So it's not really the same thing.
That is true.
Yeah, I've actually heard stories. I'm not sure if it was from Ron Jeremy, but just like saying that some of the women that he's seen in the business are just, you know, just really not very nice to work with. At least, you know, like some of them will say things like to the male co-star, like, you know, don't look at me like I'm your girlfriend. Get over here and nail me and let me get out of here and collect my paycheck.
That's very similar to my past girlfriends.
Dude.
And you don't always get to pick who you work with. I mean, I met a guy that I used to joke around with as the ultimate minority. He was a black midget bisexual porn star. You know, it's like you can't get any
he's kind of carved out a niche for himself.
Yeah, see the biggest minority on the planet now?
Really, really, real genre there. You got like narrow very scope. Well,
the women are all going to be damaged anyway. I mean, it's they would have to be. But aren't the men more like mentally, emotionally healthy and stable? Wouldn't they be? I mean,
well, probably because men are naturally sex hounds anyway. So they're just doing what they wish they could do anyway.
I would be, you know, it would be okay. I mean, I wouldn't have a problem if I was Ron Jeremy working with many of those women. I'd never work with Brie Olson, though.
Me either.
Brie Olson is the biggest friggin' skank.
She voluntarily joined a contest and won as the biggest whore in the world. Does it get worse than that?
The world's biggest whore contest.
She is gross. Oh,
in
God.
10 years, Brie Olson's going to look like Oscar the Grouch's mouth, you know, down there.
Apparently, one of her stories when trying to win to be the biggest whore in the world, she claimed that on some given night, who knows, maybe she does this every time she's in a hotel, but she claimed she went door to door in her hotel room and banged every guy on her floor of the hotel.
Oh!
Without condoms at that.
Oh, that's vile. Oh, good God.
It sounds like Kim Kardashian with the Miami Heat.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's bad.
Before, after, and during marriage.
Hey, guys, what else is going on Facebook today? There's got to be – it's been a couple of weeks, so have there been any dramatic crises or uprisings or anything that –
Yeah, actually, I think Nearing discovered one that he wants to tell us.
Yeah, Jim Treacher and Gail Simone met each other today, and they hit it off like gangbusters. Tucker Carlson apparently sticking his big snout into it, but I have a feeling those two are going to be BFFs.
Well, I love both of them. I've worked with Gail, and she's a good friend. Are they fighting, those two? Because they are politically diametrically opposed.
So I came in late. What I picked up on Twitter, and then it carried over into Facebook. So far, they avoided Pinterest, but it stems from Gail's upcoming project, The Movement. And if I have it right, and I'm sure I don't, Jim Treacher posited that The Movement was based on the Occupy movement. And Gail Simone took issue to that, saying, look, just because they're using the phrase the 99% in the advertising doesn't mean it's got anything to do with the Occupy movement. And just like an episode of Three's Company, and I'm talking, you know, Jenna Lee Harrison era Three's Company, this kind of wacky misunderstanding took off from there.
Well, it's actually called Occupy, Occupy, Occupy. And it's funny, that's actually one of the things I read in the Twitter feed between the two of them. She said, the name of the book I'm doing is Occupy, Occupy, Occupy. It has nothing to do with Occupy. And I just sat there bewildered for a minute trying to make sense of that.
I don't understand the context of that at all.
It's a rookie mistake, Michael. It's a rookie mistake to make.
Right, yeah, my mistake.
Explain that. She said the name of her book is Occupy, Occupy, Occupy. What do you mean?
She said the name of my book is the word occupy three times is the name of it. And then the very next sentence after saying it's called Occupy, 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 she said it has nothing to do with Occupy.
Well, then did she say what the book was about?
I don't know if I read that much. Octopi, probably.
The Octomom.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually responded to that. I said, I'm writing a book called Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars, but it has nothing to do with Star Wars.
Now, in all fairness, though, a lot of liberals don't believe that the Occupy movement is truly liberal. So, I mean, you could write a liberally based story and still not feel that it's actually Occupy. You could be, looking at the same thing. You're not seeing the forest for the trees, really. I don't know that. I haven't read the book, so it's not possible to say at this point. But I mean, it's conceivable that maybe we see it as Occupy because we're conservative, and they don't because Occupy is bad now.
We're not all conservative. Right. CHV, what do you think of that?
You mean about the Occupy movement?
Yeah. Is Occupy a leftist movement, or is it something else?
I don't think it should be considered a leftist movement, because in my view, it should be about all the people who are pissed off that a small group of people brought the world's economy right to the edge, and no one was ever held accountable. I mean, it was basically the same thing with Enron, that Enron basically extorted the state of California in pimping up power costs and stuff like that. And I think maybe two people went to jail, and for the whole mess with the Wall Street crash, no one's ever been held accountable. So I think people have every right to be pissed off, and people on the left and right should be pissed off on that. And that's actually one of the things that I'm really unhappy with Obama on, is that no one's ever been held accountable.
Well, this is the thing. It sounds to me, then, that the difference between the Tea Party and Occupy, two sides of the same coin, both acknowledge that things are really badly screwed up, and it's just kind of a matter of who you blame. Do you place the blame on the private sector or the public sector? And the Tea Party obviously blames government, and Occupy blames the banks and big business. And maybe that goes hand in glove, in a sense, with big business and how they work with the government. But that's not the main issue. The main issue is private sector gone absolutely haywire. Now, I think that you won't have too hard of a time finding conservatives who agree that certain entities in the private sector and Wall Street are to blame, are accountable for this. But in general, I think most conservatives will align themselves with the Tea Party over this disaster. I think I feel like Occupy, and the way that it presents itself as a radical kind of uprising, I guess the Tea Party does too. Oakley, well, what do you think? Where am I wrong?
The problem with the Occupy movement is the same problem they had this time. 2 years ago when they were occupying the Wisconsin Rotunda, and no offense to CHV, but you get that many liberals in one place, they're going to break out the didgeridoos. They're going to break out, you know, the brown acid. They're going to have to set up the rape tents. I mean, you get that many liberals in one room and it turns into a friggin' freak show.
Well, they identify themselves as a political movement based on what they end up kind of doing. You're kind of right about that. It's like, the Tea Party is definitely conservative because they're not really going to break out the bongo drums.
Right.
They're not going to get naked and dance, whereas Occupy will.
So yeah, not all like, don't clean up. It's kind of like having a 24-hour news channel. Occupy is 24/7. They're actually living in parks, whereas Tea Parties are a bunch of individual gatherings of people who just get together for a rally, then they go home.
No.
I think when you talk about the difference between a Tea Party rally and an Occupy rally, the image is the 4-ton mountain of shit, and I mean human feces.
That's true.
That appears after one of those two rallies. Tea Partiers do not deposit 4-ton mountains of shit.
Right.
No, they actually clean up the park before they go home.
Okay. Yeah.
But then, in the end, but that's not, we're not, we're focused.
That doesn't, I'm sorry, yeah, Oakley, that doesn't invalidate the point of the movement, does it? It just means that the people who align themselves with the movement are slobs.
It's just the community organizing version of the Tea Party for the left. Like, the Democrats wanted their own Tea Party because, frankly, they got spanked really, really badly after Obama took office. Like, in the 2010 midterms were one of the largest landslide losses ever.
Over 700 offices.
I think it was
won by the Republicans.
Yeah, I think it was the biggest turnover in like 86 and so, something like that.
What they did is they took the anti-war movement, and Bernadette Dorn and Bill Ayers confirmed this to Andrew Breitbart and Tucker Carlson when they had dinner together.
Wait, what?
Who?
Tucker Carlson?
Yes, Tucker Carlson. He bit in.
Do you work with Tucker Carlson, you motherfucker?
I think Oakley's your guy, Nearing.
They
Oakley is why I couldn't call in earlier, because of Tucker Carlson.
That no good mother. No.
Oakley, Die Hard 2 is better than Die Hard 1. Sit on that.
You shut your filthy whore mouth. That's not true. Anyway, they said that it was essentially, they just took the anti-war movement. You remember how violently against Bush they were. You know, it's just horrifying to drop water on, you know, people's faces. I used to do that to kids when I was a kid, and it was done to me too. I'm alive, you know, but now Obama drops bombs on everyone and it's okay because they took that anti-war movement and made it into the Occupy movement.
Right.
And it's still about, hate this person, because as long as we have an enemy to point you towards, you won't pay attention to what I'm doing over here.
Right.
And that's what I think the Occupy movement was.
Well, you're saying that the Tea Party worked in 2010. Did Occupy work in 2012? Was that part of the engine that drove the Democrats to basically maintain the White House and the Senate? Was it effective?
I don't think so. I think that it was kind of a flash in the pan. It lasted for about 6 months, and then when winter set in, it just kind of fizzled away. But I think that it raised some decent points, though, and that, you know, if John Doe off the street were to try any of this crap that a banker tried or a stockbroker, he'd have his ass in prison pretty quickly. But, you know, if you've got the right connections, it's, you know, fuck it. The law is optional.
Well, that's the crazy thing, though. Like, when the Tea Party first started, it started over the Wall Street bailouts. That's what it was about. It was saying, look, these criminal bankers cannot benefit from their crimes. and we shouldn't be giving them money. We shouldn't be taxing me to give it to this rich guy who just stole it from me already. And they were called racist for that, which is kind of, you know, the oddest part of it, that, you know, that but that's, again, part of the messaging and the positioning that the Democrat Party is amazing at. Like, they will paint.
They're really good at it.
Well, and I always said that if Obama, and this is going to be a weird sentence to come out of my mouth, but if Obama was half the politician or half the leader that Clinton was, he could have co-opted the Tea Party movement pretty quickly. Remember when Clinton got all the heat for wanting to go to the Vietnam Memorial, and everyone said he shouldn't go because he was a draft dodger, and he went there, and the first words out of his mouth were, "I have heard you, now I ask you to hear me," and the crowd went silent, and all these Vietnam vets who were pissed off at Clinton let the man talk. I'm not saying they were converted, but they heard him. And I've long held the view that pre-2010, if Obama had gone to a Tea Party rally, just pick one and say, I hear your concerns. Like Nixon going to the Lincoln Memorial. I hear your concerns. Let me tell you, exactly. You know, but instead, because Obama's from Chicago, because Obama's in never-ending campaign mode, he had to demonize the Tea Party. And I think that choice probably informed the entire 4 years of his first term.
And it goes on now. I mean, the question is it strategically a bad idea? Because he was able to marginalize through demonization his opposition. And I personally feel completely disenfranchised by this president. And I didn't feel that way about Clinton. I disagreed with Clinton, but I saw tremendous respect for him. And I knew that if I walked up to him, if I ever met him and was able to tell him my concerns, he would listen. I honestly feel that Obama hates me.
Right.
And if he ever met me and we discussed my viewpoints about things, it would disgust him. And I don't think my viewpoints are particularly disgusting at all. And I do think that he broke a promise to me that he made January 2009 when he said that he was going to endeavor to be all of our presidents, and I think he lied.
To say what you want about Clinton. Clinton saw himself as the president of all Americans, and it goes right back to the thing I said about the Vietnam Memorial. But Obama clearly does not. Obama clearly sees his supporters and the other.
Well, it was. Yeah, well, his goals, though, are, I don't know if they're as important as power, you know, like because he's creating a system where he can, you know, marginalize, you know, conservative thought. But I mean, the reason Clinton was successful is he was a pragmatist, whereas Obama is a complete ideologue. I don't know about, like, CHV, who do you think at this point was in their presidency, who was a better president? Between Clinton and Obama?
Well, at this point in Clinton's presidency, he was just about to go down the Monica Lewinsky avenue. So that kind of completely deep-sixed most of his second term. But I'd say at this moment, probably Bill Clinton, because I think he was, you know, I think he was more politically savvy, but the same token, you know, like I said, I don't regret voting for Obama. However, you know, I want to know what else he's going to do. But, you know, it's just, you know, everyone who calls him just like this dyed-in-the-wool liberal, I just don't agree with it because, you know, to a lot of extent, especially with his defense policy, it's just as right-wing as George W. Bush is.
Well, you know, I have to say, the way he deals with the war and for his foreign policy is mostly hawkish so that it doesn't become an issue for him, because his concerns are not about terrorists. His concerns really are not about what's going on overseas at all. He will leave that to whoever wants to deal with it. I mean, he basically will just write him a blank check and say, do something about it, take care of it, because his concerns are all domestic. His concerns are transforming the United States of America, and he doesn't want to be distracted from that at all by anything.
Yeah, but if that were
he knows that he's got room. Like they said, you know, only Nixon can go to China. Well, Obama can be as hawkish as he wants to be and know that he's not going to have Code Pink rallies in the street. He's not going to have, you know, these anti-war rallies, because like you say, the anti-war rallies have evolved into Occupy rallies. So you get the same kids out there protesting, but they're not going to be protesting him. So he's free to be as hawkish as he wants to be, so he can divert his focus to the domestic stuff.
Yeah, but in response to Ethan's statement, though, I think that if Obama were so focused on domestic policy, that Bin Laden would probably still be alive.
No,
I disagree. I think that goes right along with what I just said.
And I didn't fully appreciate it. This is going to sound like, you know, like I just got from the movie, but I didn't fully appreciate it till I saw the Zero Dark Thirty movie. The Bin Laden thing came to Obama. The Bin Laden thing was delivered to Obama, and he sat on it for what was it? Almost 11 months? 10 months?
Yeah,
150 days. They said that's what we saw in the movie.
Yeah.
And so I think what I'm saying is, you know, if, you know, Obama's sort of casualness about things like Bin Laden, it's going to happen anyway, because all he did was basically keep, you know, Bush's war policies in rotation. They were still happening. And then things like finding Bin Laden kind of tumble into your lap, and you can say after 150 days, yeah, go ahead and kill him as long as it doesn't hurt me politically, because I'm working on my domestic policy. I mean, why in the world?
Yeah, but the thing is that as much as the SEALs deserve a lot of credit, because obviously those were the guys on the ground, those were the guys with the guns, and they were the guys whose lives were at risk. If that whole mission would have fallen on its face, who would have taken the heat? It wouldn't have been the SEALs. It would have been Obama for not telling the Pakistanis, I'm coming over your border to pull off this mission. And he didn't tell them intentionally, because I think Bush had done that in the past, and lo and behold, the Pakistanis picked off or tipped off Bin Laden or whoever, because you can't tell me that those two groups aren't working hand in hand.
Honestly,
yeah,
I want to pick at that
statement for a second, and I'm not jumping on you, CHV, but because that statement came right out of the Clinton line from the Obama campaign ad. And if the mission had gone bad, if the SEALs had been captured or killed, yeah, the SEALs would have taken the heat, because they're going to be the guys getting fed into wood chippers. They're going to be the ones who are being, you know, fed to dogs while they're still alive. Yeah, Obama would have caught some political heat, but I take issue when Bill Clinton said if these SEALs had been captured or killed, the results could have been disastrous for Obama. That's not
disastrous for him, not for the others.
Yeah.
Now, don't you think the media would have covered for him like they did with Benghazi, though?
Oh, I agree. That's what I was about to say. I think they'd find a way to divert attention from him and say it had nothing to do with him. He was completely unaware of it, and blame it on somebody else.
Yeah. What tends to happen.
Which is why he gave the command right before he went to the, was it the correspondence dinner?
Right.
Like he basically gave the order, the Bin Laden order, and then went to a party with 500 people.
Yeah, that's right.
So he could be there the entire time. So, you know, I think it's possible there might have been someone went rogue. It was Sarah Palin. She did it.
Right, right.
You know,
it was Bush's policies that somehow ended up causing this.
I mean, we'll never know that. I mean, that's a what if. But, I mean, I'm sure he had a contingency set up there. I mean, he took that amount of time either for two reasons, to try to position it for, you know, election benefit, or he wasn't going to do it, but he realized that if he doesn't do it sooner or later, it's going to get out.
Right.
That we found
him. What would happen if the mission failed? Who would leak out the information that Bin Laden was there in this building when we didn't actually even know, and that we failed to get him? I mean, it could have been spun in 800 different ways, because there would be no images of Bin Laden running away scot-free. I mean, the American people would never have to have known that this was a genuine opportunity to get bin Laden.
Yeah, but we found out later after Bora Bora that in a lot of this was through cracked Al-Qaeda communique that he was there, and at one point he thought he was going to get his ass pulverized. And unfortunately, you know, the Bush administration trusted the wrong mercenaries, and, you know, they're mercenaries, they're just going to go with whoever pays them the most. So those people couldn't have been trusted. So they had people on the ground that were supposed to be the source of intel who were completely unreliable. And, you know, what happened?
But it was in the early days of the war, and they didn't know the territory, you know, well enough yet. No, I mean, the big thing with that, like, a lot of intelligence got leaked out during the Bush years because of petty partisanship. Like the idea that they were talking about secret CIA prisons as if there has not always been secret CIA prisons. I mean, there's this, apparently in Benghazi, there was a secret CIA prison is where everyone finally died at the end. Like they went back to a CIA safe house /prison, and that's where they killed the two people that tried to save the ambassador. And I mean, there's always been CIA prisons. I mean, that's the way they work. So I just found it so odd that they would, people were yelling about these secret CIA prisons. I'm like, no, you're just not supposed to talk about them, you asshole. You
know, like, right.
You're supposed to let them do their work. And that's, we sleep better at night, not knowing what they have to do to guarantee our safety.
Yeah, I don't get these people who think that there should be a map of secret CIA prisons online for them to look at. You know? Like, where are they? I want to go visit
with
one.
Targeting icons.
Right, yes, with Sarah Palin target icons on them.
I know, yeah. I
mean, guys, yeah. Let's take a break for a minute here. Yeah. Okay. And let's. I'm going to change up the format of the show a little bit. We're going to go a little bit long this time because ordinarily it's about 30 minutes, but we'll just keep going. In the meantime, I would love to hear the musical interlude. Okay. What do you have for us?
This week I decided I was sick of playing my own music, so I started checking out some undiscovered bands from around the country. And we discovered one called The Fanboys, and I talked to them, and they sent me a track to play. It's called Being Bald. I don't understand what the name is about, but let's check it out.
I was being a fanboy on Facebook one day, making some mess and creating BS. But little did I know he was waiting for me, the Honorable Ian Aldi from MySpace and other sites. Ian Aldi, Ian Aldi, Ian Aldi, Ian Aldi. He said, it seems that you don't know that certain people have been watching what you've been doing on Facebook, and they are not happy, and may have to take some action off of Facebook, where he is a man of action. He called me homophobic, and then said I look like a fag. Racist, and then said I was niggerant. He said I must not write at the college level like him. He told me to stop going all Jam Brady and not to be a triple stuffed Oreo if I ever want to learn to be with the ladies.
Ian Hall, Ian Hall, Ian Hall, Ian Hall.
Down for a minute here. All the girls down at the National Archive, you know you like what you see. And to all the BS fanboys,
guys who think they can have the right to go to whatever conventions you want. Yeah, that's right. You know who you are. Briosin, world's biggest whore, 2010. Even Howard Stern knows what's up. Are you ready? One. Two. One. One, two, three. Do the head wobble, y'all.
Ian Hall. Ian Hall. Ian Hall. Ian Hall.
You know what time it is. It's time to get old. Over London, rock on Baltimore, Tennessee's nightclub, $1.50 domestic bottle beer all night long.
All right, what was that? That was the Fanboys?
Yeah, that was awesome, by the way.
It's brilliant. Sweet.
Love that.
I was dancing very much. All right, guys, what's going on? What else is going on right now on the web?
Well, there was the, back to DC Comics, there is the kerfluffle, I guess, over them hiring anti-gay author Orson Scott Card to
write. What do you mean anti-gay?
That the actual title of the Huffington Post article is DC Comics hires anti-gay author Orson Scott Card to pen Superman Digital First. It goes on to mention that petitioners are boycotting the selection of author Orson Scott Card set to pen a story for an Adventures of Superman Digital First release. Opponents of Card's are taking issue with the writer's anti-gay efforts. Apparently he's religious and believes that same-sex marriage is, an abomination or whatever the case may be. I haven't really read that much about his religious positions or beliefs in that respect. I never really honestly cared. But
now, if I'm right, these are the same beliefs that our president held up through April of last year. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, it's striking how one is in this article. It even says was called out by Salon's Donna Minkowitz as a disgustingly outspoken homophobe. It's interesting that Obama would publicly declare that he does not believe in same-sex marriage. It was between a man and a woman, and he went for the whole traditional thing, and he never really got called that. So I mean, it's odd how one is disgusting and one is not. I'm not sure how that works, but.
Well, now Orson Scott Card, if I'm right, he works for Tucker Carlson.
He probably does. That's all disgusting homophobes work for Tucker Carlson, I've heard.
Well, I know that I'm not sure when, but apparently about a year or two ago, Card wrote an Iron Man series. I think it was Ultimate Iron Man, and I don't recall hearing a whole lot of political to do over it back then, but and I've made the same comment on Facebook, and that's that if people are that turned off by Card and his work, just treat it the same way you treated Chick-fil-A. Just don't go to the restaurant or just don't buy the book.
Right.
Well,
I remember, I'm sorry, Naren, but I remember Orson Scott Card writing Iron Man, and I do remember the same kerfluffle happening because I remember reading an article that Orson Scott Card wrote about homosexuality that appeared in a newspaper around 1992. So they were, they were already complaining about his homophobia. I think what's happened though is that the gay rights movement has some wind behind its sails now, and now is going to actually try to make a stand and put a stop. Not necessarily homophobia, because homophobia, it's like racism. I'm not sure if it can ever be extinguished from people completely. However, the guys that advocate, that actually go out and try to make change so that gay people can't be married, I personally find that to be, I find that to be not lovable.
Right.
No, not at all.
Because it's another business.
Exactly. It's just I don't understand like why – I don't understand how it affects you. I don't understand how it affects anyone's life. And on the other hand, I see nothing. Even as a conservative, I'm completely liberal on gay rights because I think the one purpose of life is that people should be happy and people should be free and people should be free from the tyranny of other people.
I think that's more libertarian than liberal. It's more keep the government off.
One way that it's affected me is, you know, Maryland, as you may or may not know, just passed gay marriage. So it's legal in the state of Maryland.
Well, I'm finally happy for you, Nearing.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. And I would just say that speaking solely as a divorce lawyer, you know, my client base
doubled.
Has now increased by a
is Nearing dropping out for you guys?
It might be, but yeah. I mean, same-sex marriage. 100%.
you know,
might have to call Nearing from the house phone and see if he's okay over there. His connection is broken.
I support same-sex marriage. The problem that I have with the protests ideas is they end up actually hurting the movement.
Yeah,
like the Chick-fil-A thing. I mean, did that help anyone? It turned out actually to help Chick-fil-A in the end. Yeah. Their sales have gone up. And I know that they won. Oh, and a guy was convicted of domestic terrorism, but, you know, whatever. I almost forgot about
I think
that
the Chick-fil-A much, thing. But. I think the Chick-fil-A thing had the best of all possible outcomes.
Yeah.
Point of view. Because, I mean, Chick-fil-A ended up doing great, and I think Chick-fil-A is a great restaurant on its merits, if not its politics. And, you know, on the other hand, the guy owns Chick-fil-A who made those statements actually did change his position. And he came out and he said, I understand what you're saying, and I'm going to stop donating Chick-fil-A's money to, how was it, Family Research Center or something?
Yeah.
No,
you know, I mean, so... And there was a terrorist, and there was a liberal terrorist. Yeah. So for me, everything worked out great because I got, you know, Chick-fil-A, listen, Chick-fil-A's cool, I can eat there, and left-wingers are terrorists. To
right. It's like the best possible situation ever, right?
I mean, the problem I have overall, though, is they don't, you don't beat a bully by being a bully. I mean, you stand up for yourself, but like they're trying to demand that Orson Scott Card be fired. Now, his belief structure, which I disagree with, is based on his religious beliefs. And in the United States of America, you're supposed to have the freedom of religion. So for DC, and I don't know the labor law exactly in the US, but if DC were to fire him for his religious belief, what position would they be in?
Right.
Yeah, I should be fired. Again, I think it should just be a mark, and God help me, I think I probably sound like a conservative here. I think it should just be market-driven that, you know, again, if people want to buy the book, fine. I agree. They don't want to buy the book, fine.
The only problem I've had with the kerfuffle, so to speak, is that people are actively trying to stop this man from getting work. I don't care what his personal beliefs are. I don't agree with them, but that shouldn't stop him from being able to work and support himself and his family.
Well, I disagree with that too, Michael. Here's what I think should happen. A, I think the DC Comics should respond. First of all, okay, let's start at the protest movement alone. Protesters should raise awareness about what this man does. And then hopefully the market will not support the books that he writes. Okay. Now, if that's the case, if that works out, then there's no reason for DC Comics to hire him because it's poison to their line of comics. DC doesn't care. DC just wants to put out good Superman stories and make money. They can't go around and be the arbiter of everybody's politics and say, no, you can't work for us because we're, you know, our political stance as a company is such and such. They shouldn't have a political stance.
Right.
It should be people who just hire people who tell good Superman stories and make money. Now, if that's the case, Orson Scott Card is going to be out of work. Right. And if that's the case, then he should kind of go back and look at what he's doing. I mean, you know, this is the thing. go ahead and feel however you want to feel, but when you're an active political force against the happiness of people that has nothing to do with you, right, you are a toxic human being, and you should be punished in some way.
Well, I don't think you're
this is the thing.
I don't think you're disagreeing with me. I think what you said was the logical second step of what I said. I don't think they should be firing him just because he these people disagree with him. I think they should let the market decide, just like you said. If sales are bad,
exactly,
they need to move on.
Well, does anyone exactly think that maybe the reason why Superman, as opposed to when Card was working on Iron Man, is getting more of a reaction is that Superman is kind of seen as this ideal person, and that he doesn't judge anyone? If he sees someone falling off a bridge, he doesn't care who it is, he's going to sweep in and save him. And he's kind of like this, yeah, idealized American. And what Card is coming from, you know, like with this, and whatever his political beliefs, I mean, it seems to be kind of contrary to that kind of ideal.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think it's a tricky thing. I think people who work on characters like Superman should be, in some way, should be held to some sort of standard. You look at Christopher Reeve, who portrayed Superman in those movies, and he led a courageous life because he took on the mantle of Superman.
Right.
He had to represent that character and what that character means to everybody. To me, young Ethan at age 3, who first saw him and decided that Christopher Reeve was Superman, I had expectations of him.
Right.
And I think those of us who do get to work on Superman should all kind of, you know, be good people who see the world like I see it. I think people should, in general, endeavor to be more like me in every way. But it is important that that people not feel disenfranchised and excluded by their Superman comics. God knows he'd save every single one of us.
Right.
Except Tucker, if only he were real. Except for Randy Perry.
Hi-yo.
Let him fall, Superman. Let him fall. Hey guys, I think we gotta begin to wrap up this wonderful edition of Van Sciver Town, our fourth episode. It wasn't bad, right?
That was
okay.
Fun.
It was it's always fun. I wanna thank this week in Geek.net that hosts us, and I want to thank engineer Dodd. Kneel before Dodd. He's a good man. And you know, as usual, I'd like to thank you, gentlemen. First, you know, unfortunately we don't have Nearing here. His call dropped out, but we'll say goodnight on behalf of Nearing. Michael,
I just want to say goodnight to all of you sexy people out there except for Randy Perret.
Oakley,
It was a great time as always. I want to thank you and just remind everyone that I am so great that if you dream of beating me, you should wake up and apologize.
CHV.
Thanks very much. I had a good time tonight and have a good evening.
And we'll see you all next week. So for my friends and myself, good night.